Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My next guest is, in a way, the Michael Bloomberg of Los Angeles. No, he's not the mayor. Big difference there, obviously. But Eli Broad has been successful in business by the billions and has now gone on to be a major philanthropist in L.A., a patron of the arts, including two museums that bear his name. He's on the board of MoMA here in New York as well, and he's been influential in promoting development in L.A. and an advocate for Bloomberg-style education reform. Eli Broad has a book called The Art of Being Unreasonable, Lessons in Unconventional Thinking, and he joins me now. Mr. Broad, thank you very much for talking to me again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be with you.
Let me start here. I understand you signed the Bill Gates and Warren Buffett giving pledge for very wealthy people to give away at least 50% of your wealth to charity in your life or at death. Why did you sign the pledge?
Well, we made it for 75%. And even before my friend Bill Gates and Warren Buffett asked me to do it, we had planned on giving away 75% of our wealth during our lifetime. I agree with Andrew Carnegie, who said, "He who dies with wealth dies in shame." Someone else said, "He who gives while he lives also knows where it goes."
How do you decide, as a philanthropist, what the most worthy things are for you to endow?
Well, when I left the world of commerce 12 years ago, I looked around the world, and we traveled the world, and I thought K-12 education was the biggest challenge America had. You know, we used to be number one in graduation rates, high up in math, science, and so on. That's all changed. And I became very concerned about the future of our country. The Council of Foreign Relations 10 days ago came out with a report saying education is a national security issue because 70% of adults, 18 to 24, are not capable of serving the military. So we picked that as a major thing we should spend our time and energy and resources on.
And the other time that you and I met was at the Aspen Ideas Festival a few years ago. You were on a panel that I moderated about education reform. I guess you're still fighting that fight.
Well, a lot's happening, and it's not happening fast enough, unfortunately.
Your book makes it sound, and I got the impression from you then, that the issue is largely one of choice for urban kids. There is, as you know, a different camp of activists that says choice is a false hope because the only solution is making every neighborhood school good, and the whole charter school movement just drains some of the most motivated families from the other public schools, and that this is the wrong emphasis. What do you say to that today?
Well, I say that we've got a great system of higher education. One of the reasons it's great is you've got competition between public universities and other universities. And I do believe that parents should have a choice. I do believe that quality charter schools, not all charter schools, but the quality ones, offer a great choice. And I hope that other public schools will end up emulating the best practices of the best charter schools.
There's been research that shows nationally charter schools don't produce any more successful outcomes than regular public schools. Does that dampen your enthusiasm at all?
Well, we don't totally agree with that research. In fact, our foundation just spent over $500,000 to research the 20 largest charter management organizations and throughout America. And what we found was 15 of the 20 were doing better with African-American Hispanic children than white children in the same area. So all charter schools are not good, but the better ones are doing significantly better than other public schools.
The philanthropist Eli Broad, my guest on WNYC, and the title of your book is The Art of Being Unreasonable. Is that a virtue?
And I will be on the 92nd Street Y being interviewed by Charlie Rose this Sunday at 8 o'clock.
Thank you for mentioning that. I was going to mention it at the end, but Sunday night at 8 o'clock, 92nd Street Y, Charles and Charlie. Yes, go ahead. I mean, Eli Broad and Charlie Rose. Go ahead. On the question of being unreasonable, is that a virtue?
Yes. Yeah, that happened because my wife, after we're married several years, gave me a quote of George Bernard Shaw that said, "The reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends upon the unreasonable man." That's how that came into being.
And one of the tips from your book is to ask unreasonable questions. Do you want to give us an example?
Ask why not. People would say, well, it's never been done before. You're taking a risk, et cetera, et cetera. So in all the things we've done in life, whether it's starting two Fortune 500 companies or what we're doing in philanthropy, we do things differently. And it seems most of the time it gets results.
You are the force behind two Fortune 500 companies, KB Homes, which is a home builder, and Sun America, a retirement savings financial advisor. They're such different companies. What tied your interest in them together?
Well, both served a very useful purpose for people. One, we were building homes so young people with families could get out of apartments and own their own home. We felt very good about that. That started in 1956. Then in 1971, we acquired an old life insurance company, Sun Life Insurance Company of America, founded in 1890. And after several years, we said, we've got to find a better niche, and we chose retirement savings and knew that all the baby boomers and others were not saving enough for retirement. So we served them in a number of ways. So we felt good about what we're doing in both of those industries.
Has the financial crisis of the last several years changed any of the fundamental advice you give to people trying to save for retirement?
No, other than to not become traders, so to speak, and over a period of time to believe in their investments, even if they dip during a period such as they have in the last two, three years ago. But it's all come back.
I notice in your book you wrote that everyone should be a philanthropist, no matter how much or how little wealth they have. What do you mean by that? Is it just, you know, the straight old everybody should give something to charity?
Well, there's a difference between charity and philanthropy, in my view. Charity is just writing a check and not doing anything else. Philanthropy is, yes, giving resources, but also getting involved one way. And everyone can get involved in something, whether it's schools, whether it's hospitals, and the like. So I do think we all have an obligation to give back. This is a great country. It's a great meritocracy. We've all benefited from it, so it would be great if we all saw fit to give back.
You're an art museum founder and a collector. What do you think of the Scream selling for $120 million at auction this week?
I can't believe some of these prices. And the Scream's one thing, but even contemporary art. For example, we started collecting in the mid to late 70s. In the 80s, we got involved with artists like Cindy Sherman, Jeff Koons, we have his largest collection, and a number of others. And to see their prices go up 50-fold in that period of time is just, to me, sort of frightening. All that happens is we have to pay more for insurance because we don't sell.
So how do you understand it as a businessman that dollar figure makes sense to anybody? Is it just the scarcity and the prestige of owning these things and there are enough very rich people in the world to bid them up?
I think it is. It's a scarcity with regard to the best works and so on. What you've had is you've had Russian oligarchs become collectors. The Emirates, especially Qatar, has become a rather large collector. hedge fund managers who were not buying art 20 years ago became great collectors, people in Asia and the like. So it's a question of supply of the most important work.
Of course,
and they're bidding prices up.
There are a lot of working artists who wish more people would invest in them.
Well, everyone wants these people typically want artists that are already established and to get their best work. Now, young collectors could go ahead as we did when we started and find artists that are not yet as highly recognized but have great potential.
The whole Banksy Mr. Brainwash thing was an L.A. phenomenon. Did you buy any of those?
No, we didn't.
And I see you're on the MoMA board here in New York, Museum of Modern Art. Is the modern era your favorite for art?
MoMA, I think, is a great, no question, it's a great museum. There's no museum that has a better collection of modern contemporary art than MoMA. It's got a great board. It's got a great director. And it does a great job. So I've enjoyed being on the board. I'm now a life trustee of that museum together with the Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles and the Los Angeles County Museum of Art.
You're a longtime Angeleno. What have you been thinking this week, 20 years after the riots?
I'm sorry. What have I been thinking about
this week with the 20th anniversary of the riots?
Well, it was a sad period, and I'm glad we're reflecting on it, and I'm happy that that frankly our police force has become far more community-oriented, shall we say, and accepted by the people in the Latino and African-American communities.
Some of your development work, I gather, has been controversial in downtown L.A. Some people thought that you were unreasonable, to use your word, for moving low-income communities to make way for commercial development and even some of the cultural development. I know you're behind the Walt Disney Concert Hall there. Is that a kind of unreasonableness that's a fair criticism of you?
I don't think it's fair. Frankly, I don't think I'm unreasonable. Some people think I'm unreasonable because I demand things. I do things that other people are not willing to do. They don't think it's going to work, whether it was building the Walt Disney Concert Hall by Frank Gehry, whether it was starting the Museum of Contemporary Art 30-some-odd years ago.
But what about the gentrification question there, displacement?
The transportation costs?
Displacement of low-income people.
There hasn't been that much in Los Angeles, certainly not not with Walt Disney Concert Hall, the Museum of Contemporary Art, and so on, as there has been in other cities. Some of it has occurred in parts of Los Angeles, but not to the extent that it's happened in older cities like New York.
Well, we have to leave it there with Eli Broad, very successful businessman, now philanthropist, as you heard, a signatory to the Buffett Gates Giving Pledge. He has promised to give away 75% of his billions of dollars of wealth by the time of or at his death. And his new book is The Art of Being Unreasonable, Lessons in Unconventional Thinking. You can see Charlie Rose interview Eli Broad on the stage of the 92nd Street Y Sunday night. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Broad. Nice to talk to you again.
Good to be with you. Thank you.